This is the Blood and Platelets podcast, Tales of Transplant Survivors with Brandon, Alex, and Chrissy. We are genetically modified humans who have come together to tell real stories, real emotions, real experiences, to fill a void for patients, encourage, give hope, and inspire those going through treatment and beyond.
Okay.
Last but not least.
Right.
Chrissy.
Super Chrissy.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
The youngest of our group. And
that's right. Well, yeah. In bone marrow birthdays. The youngest. Yeah. But oldest.
But you had the longest. In
age, I think. Donor. Yeah. I'm a 49-year-old woman.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Oh,
no, I'm a 60-something-year-old woman.
Brandon wins.
I win. Yeah. I definitely win.
But you do win in the pre-transplant.
Oh, length. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You had a long...
I had a long wait.
Yeah.
Journey.
Yes.
Wait. That
yes.
led up to your transplant.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you could explain that. I mean, we heard my story and Brandon's story and how we both quickly got diagnosed and quickly got, as quick as possible, found our donor and did a transplant. And yours didn't, your story doesn't pan out quite like ours.
No, it didn't. It was a long, long, slow buildup. Okay, so I'm Chrissy Kobata, and I am a bone marrow, I'm a stem cell transplant survivor. I am 36, but my story started when I was 15, actually.
Wow.
So I got so when I was 15, I got really sick with like a virus, like a flu virus. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those where I couldn't kick the fever for like the week. I was just feeling terrible, couldn't keep any food down, and was not getting better. And so I remember my mom took me to the doctor on a weekend, so it was actually the weekend doctor. It wasn't our regular family doctor, but it was the doctor on call. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, but they took blood, and we got home. And by the time we had gotten home, they had called back and called my parents and left a message and said, "You need to come back. We think she has leukemia." So immediately my mom, you know, kind of pumped the brakes and was like, "No, my kid doesn't have cancer." I didn't even know this was going on. She sort of took care of this all through the weekend. But essentially talked it over with my dad, and they decided that, cause I was starting to get better, over the weekend, and they talked to the doctor on the phone, and he had explained that my platelets were really, really low.
Okay.
I don't know why he thought that was leukemia, because that's not typically going to be.
Yeah.
But my counts, I guess, in general, were not that great across the board. So they ended up not having me go back in that weekend, but we did go back to my regular doctor, and he looked at the blood tests and he said, "You know, I think we need to have her see a hematologist just to figure out what this is, because yes, there is some abnormalities there that we should probably figure out." And at this point, I was already a lot better from the virus.
You were 15.
And this is 15.
And this was what year?
So this was in 1997.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right before
97, 98. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was a sophomore in high school. And so I remember we went to the hematologist at UCLA, and it was like a long consultation appointment. It was like a 2-hour consultation appointment. I don't remember anything of what he said. I mean, it was all flying over my head. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't feel sick anymore, so I was like, whatever. And then I remember them throwing out 3 letters to me, ITP, which is, if you Google it, it's like idiopathic something. It's essentially just autoimmune disorder. And it's kind of a catch-all for, we don't really know what's wrong with you, but your body's just not doing something normal, but nothing to the point that we're that concerned with. And so they did opt at that point to do a bone marrow biopsy just to rule out any kind of cancer. And they did. There was no blast cells at that time when I was 15. So
you did do a biopsy.
I did a biopsy. That was my first experience of a bone marrow biopsy.
Young.
Yeah, I was young. Didn't know you could get put under for it either, so I just always assumed you had to be awake for all of them. Because it was outpatient. I was awake for all...
I was awake for all of mine.
For all 17 of mine.
Yeah. I was, yeah, 17?
Yeah,
I had
17.
Like 9. I thought that was...
Wait, is 17. That different than a spinal tap?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. A bone marrow aspiration is when they take... Literally, like what your mom, when your mom donated her bone marrow, they took it out of her hip.
Right.
They do the same thing on a bone marrow biopsy.
Wait,
okay.
They
just take
a
much
not
smaller
a bone
amount.
Biopsy, no.
You never had a biopsy?
I had spinal taps, but not
interesting.
Bone marrow.
Biopsy. But that might have been what they did back then. Yeah,
and
I don't know.
Sucked.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure you had a spinal tap. That was just to see if the cancer
went into your
spinal
fluid.
Cord.
Yeah.
No, I never had one.
Oh, really?
Oh,
no.
Really?
No.
Lucky.
I just had bone marrow biopsies.
Okay.
So that was at 15. So they basically just said, this is what you have. You're going to live with it. You'll be fine. We're just going to monitor it. You know, go on and live your life. Great. Cool. So, you know, go through high school, as an athlete all through high school, go through college,
you didn't have to do anything.
I didn't have to do anything. I didn't take any medication for it. There was no, be careful. Well, I bruised, you know, my platelets were low, but there was no, extra precautions I had to take. And I went to Boulder, so it wasn't like it was a quiet school to go to college at. It was a lot of hard partying and a lot of fun. So, you know, I went on with my life. And then post-graduation, so this is now fast forward 10 years. So from when I was 15 to when I was 25.
May I interject?
Yeah.
During these 10 years, it just never was like in the back of your mind that you have this.
No.
This crazy thing.
No, we didn't even go back. I didn't go back to the doctor.
Oh, wow.
I didn't go back to my hematologist, really. I mean, maybe every year and a half, like 18 months, I would go back and nothing really changed. There was no, I really thought it was like, oh, I just have this and it's just abnormal, but it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And there can be. I mean, there's plenty of people that are anemic that, you know, there's no real issue to take iron supplements. That was kind of actually what they said. If you want, the one thing that we can do to help your platelets is to take iron supplements. I took iron supplements at one point, and they just made me nauseous, so I just said, forget it, you know? So after I graduated college, which was in 2004. So then I worked for a couple years, and in 2007, April of 2007. In February of 2007, it was one of those like 80 degree days in LA, and my brother and I were down at the beach, and I had just a massive amount of bruises on my body.
Oh.
Like, just everywhere. Covered head to toe. Like, Like it looked like I had been.
Didn't know how you got them, how you could possibly.
No, and you know, it was like, you know, you're in your early 20s, you're going out, you're drinking, maybe you stumble a little bit. At least I did. You know, you get a bruise here and there, you bump into something, you don't think about it. But these were covering everywhere. But they had been like that all through college too. So it wasn't like it was all of a sudden I was bruising really badly. I had always bruised really badly. But my brother was with me and he said, no, this is different. This is weird. You need to go back to the doctor. And I'm like, leave me alone. This is who I am. Stop making me feel self-conscious about this. I can't do anything about it. And he's like, no, I really think you should go back to the doctor. So I thought about it for a little bit and I thought, well, maybe he's right. So I made an appointment with our regular family internist. And this was like in March. Or no, this was right after in February. So this is like at the end of February. And when I went in, he drew blood. And when he got the results, he called and he said, you know, I think we need to do a few more tests. Because your platelets now have dropped significantly lower than where they were. And I just don't know what's going on here. And so he's like, it could be a variable of reasons. You know, maybe your spleen is eating your platelets, because that can actually happen. Like people's spleen, your platelets can get stuck in there.
Oh, okay.
And so then you get low platelets and you become anemic and they have to remove your spleen. And then, you know, it's no big deal. So we went through a test for that. That came back, no, it wasn't the spleen. So then there was a number of other things that we were testing that was, you know, it was about 2 months worth of testing where it was just kind of like trying to figure out what was going on. So finally they said, you know what, let's do another bone marrow biopsy. And so I had it done, went with the hematologist back at UCLA. And this time around, when the results came back, I remember I was at work and my dad had left me a message and told me to call him. So I called him and he said, you know, I don't want you to freak out, but Dr. Rozoff called and he wants all of us to come in on Friday for an appointment with you, and because they got your results and they want to talk about it. And obviously, you know, I was 26 at the time. So being at that age, it was like, I knew something was wrong.
Yeah.
And I was really scared. And they wanted my brother there too. And I was like, why do they want everybody there?
Yeah.
They don't call everyone in unless they're giving you bad news. So I freaked out at work. I ended up leaving, and then I think it was like, that was like a Wednesday, and we had Thursday, and then Friday was the appointment.
Oh, all of Thursday. Yeah. To think about.
Yeah. Oh. So we go in on Friday, and simultaneously, my mom had already started to become ill. And so she was struggling. At the time, we thought she had early onset dementia, but it ended up being something different. But she wasn't processing information as well as like she normally did.
Mm-hmm.
So with that stress added, I remember we were all sitting in there. My brother was there, my mom and my dad. And he came in and he said, okay, we have a new diagnosis for Chrissy. And what I think she has is called myelodysplastic syndrome, MDS. And all of us are like, what? Like, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, most of the time, this turns into acute leukemia. So what we refer to MDS as, sort of commonly known as, is just pre-leukemia.
Yeah.
And it's going to require a bone marrow transplant to cure it. I don't know what kind of prognosis I can give her, but if I had to give my best guess, you know, I would say she has maybe another 5 years if it's left untreated. So this is like at 26, I'm hearing this information that I only have around 5 years left to live if I don't get something, if I don't get a transplant. And so now we figured out why they brought in Randy, my brother. And so I remember really vividly, it must be something genetic, like in mothers, but my mom all of a sudden became like crystal clear.
Yeah.
During that appointment. She was like on, she knew exactly what she needed to ask. It was weird. It was like really weird.
Yeah.
We all talked about it afterwards. It was like she somehow rose above, because she knew her child was in need. Yeah, it was really crazy. So I remember we walked after, you know, and my brother actually was asking a lot of the questions. I was kind of like deer in the headlights. They were all asking a various amount of questions. It was, you know, with the transplant, he was explaining how the donor process works so that, you know, typically, thank goodness you have a sibling because they have a 25% chance of matching you. That's when my parents, you know, jumped in obviously and said, well, what about us? And he said, no, we're not going to test you because
so they didn't even think
they
about
it. Didn't even test them. Oh, that's so and unlike Brandon, the miracle child, you know, it wasn't even a possibility. So they sent Randy and I downstairs that literally right away.
Is this at City of Hope?
This is all at UCLA. They sent us down that day to get our blood drawn so it could get HLA typed. And I remember him walking with me and he goes, don't worry. I know this is going to be fine. I think I'm going to match you. I think I'm going to be your match. I go, okay. He goes, don't worry. I'm going to take care of you. And we left the doctor's office sort of all stunned, not knowing what to do. And then we went to lunch as a family. We started to figure out, okay, so this is happening to us. Who are our connections? Who do we know? Who do we need to call? What are the places we need to get into? Because my hematologist also said, he goes, look, I want you to go get other opinions because this is my diagnosis, but you should go see other people too to make sure that I'm right here, you know?
Yeah.
And, he's amazing. He's amazing. And he was very calm and he was very clear, and it was wonderful to have him sort of, you know, I'd been there when I was 15, so it's like he knew who I was. Mm-hmm. And so, we got put on this road to understand what bone marrow failure disease is, what leukemia is, what blood cancers are, the need for donors, for people to be registered. We found out, obviously, that Randy was not a match for me at this time. So this is in, 2006. This is in 2006, and then it goes obviously into 2007. But with Randy, at the time, they were looking for a 10 out of 10 match. So this is now, you know, this is 10, 12 years ago from today. And the 10 out of 10 system was already a version 2.0 of the stem cell transplant process. And so they're explaining, we used to do 6 out of 6 matching, but then we saw that too much graft versus host disease was happening and too many people were dying of complications. So now we go a step further and we want 10 out of 10 matches. However, you're half Japanese and half white, and it's going to be a challenge to find a donor. And so when we found out Randy wasn't going to be a donor, it sort of took us to this next level of just for 2 years. I mean, almost every weekend we were going out, my family and friends, we were going out and doing drives with A3M, with Be the Match. We were talking to anyone and everyone that would listen to try and register people, because we're like, all right, surely there's got to be enough Hapa kids out there
yeah.
to that we can get somebody.
Right.
But sure enough, you know, about 5 years go by from 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009. The whole time, though, I'm very lucky because nothing seems to be progressing. My counts are all really low, but I was stable. Yeah. Nothing, you know, I was going obviously more frequently to the hematologist every about 6 to 8 weeks. But the benefit of MDS is that you don't feel sick and you don't look sick. Mm-hmm. And it didn't affect my energy. I was put on medication to see if it could have some kind of effect. You know, chemo-based medications, they didn't work. So I was not on any treatment. I was very stable. And, you know, I really didn't have any symptoms.
That's crazy. And you still needed a bone marrow.
And I still and I had this lingering over my head, yeah, this sort of crazy. Like time bomb, ticking time bomb of death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at age 30, 31.
Because they said
I said that. And so, you know, these years start rolling by, and we registered probably, I mean, upwards of between 5,000 to 10,000 people.
Oh, wow.
We registered through various different drives we've done and all the outreach we did. And we actually found out that I think there were like 3 patients that found matches
because of
our efforts, awesome. Which was like, at least if I wasn't finding mine, at least somebody was finding theirs.
Yeah.
And so I was at, you know, I was going back and forth at UCLA, and then I ended up getting treated at City of Hope as well, because that's where we decided when the time came, however we would get there to do the transplant, that's where I would have it. And so I remember in 2011 sitting in an appointment, and it was in June because I only went in June and December. We were sitting there, and every appointment I had, I'd always say, you know, anybody pop up yet? You know,
right.
anybody? And I remember my doctor pulling up a screen, and she goes, well, and I see like all these numbers and all these lines, and there's various comments on each line. And some say like, mismatch, major mismatch, minor mismatch, micro mismatch, or whatever.
Right.
And I'm realizing that these are all the people that have popped up that have been set at least good kind of close,
yeah.
but there's been too many mismatches, you know, in the end. And she goes, oh, well, here's this person. Looks like they're 9 out of 10. And I'm like, that's like a big deal, right?
Yeah.
And she's like,
that's an A. That's not
I was like, wait a second. This is huge. And she goes, yeah, this is huge. She goes, yeah, there's this person here who's a 9 out of 10 for you. It is a major mismatch. But, you know, they did pop up. And she was so like not enthusiastic about it.
How is a 9 out of 10 a major mismatch?
So there's 5 cell markers that they check.
Yeah.
Everybody has an A, a B, a C, a DQ, and a DR. And all of those 5 have 2 sets. So there's 2 A's, there's 2 B's, there's 2 C's, 2 DRs, 2 DQs. If you have all your B's, C's, DRs, DQs matching, but your A's don't match on either A, that's a major mismatch.
If
you have an A16X and an A16Y, that's a minor mismatch. Mm-hmm. And then there's a micro mismatch. So obviously the smaller the mismatch, the better odds. You want micro if you have any or none. So that was in 2011. So we kind of, you know, paused at that point and said, okay, wait, so I have a 9 out of 10. what does this mean? Should we do the transplant? What should we do? And being that this was, so I had my transplant in 2017. So that was 6 years earlier. At that point, even 6 years earlier, in 2011, medicine was still, they were still doing so much research in this field and changing all the time. The protocol that they were doing in 2011, which is what I think you went through, Brandon, I don't think you went through. The protocol that they did in 2011, it was 10 days of highly intense chemotherapy.
Yeah.
That's what you did, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Without radiation.
Without radiation.
Yeah. And the results that they were getting, the survival rate at that time in 2011, I remember her saying to me, the survival rate was, I think it was 80%. But that meant 20% were dying. So one out of five patients were dying after transplant. So the success was not that encouraging. She also had said, she says, look, you're so stable and you've been so stable for so long. She says, I could cure the MDS. I could cure the pre-leukemia part. But depending on how you react to the donor and the transplant, she goes, I don't know if it's worth putting you in that situation at this time because you are so stable. I don't know if the odds weigh out where it would be worth trying the transplant at this time.
I'm taking a step back.
Yeah. So it was a little bit like, oh my God, we found a match. And then it was like, oh, okay. So we'll just keep waiting to figure this out. So, I just kind of went back to living normally and doing my own thing and working and living life. And I was still very involved with, Be the Match and promoting awareness, but we sort of took a step back because it just took so much energy mm-hmm. to do those drives. And we all needed a break. And so, cut to 2017, it got to the point in the very beginning of the year, of January of 2017, I had decided that I was tired of just waiting for everything to happen. And I was like, you know what? If I feel like I'm just this ticking time bomb, then God damn it, I'm going to start doing something to like fix myself. And that's, I started looking into more, Eastern medicine. Like, is it herbs that I can take? Is it meditate? Is it acupuncture? What is it? There's something maybe holistically that mm-hmm. I can start doing, is it diet? What is it? Because I was just done waiting. I was over it. It'd been 10 years.
Right.
And I was tired of feeling like this, impending doom on my life. And so I started doing acupuncture and taking herbs. And for whatever reason, that was in January of 2017. I had a checkup in April of 17. And my counts had dropped significantly.
That's good.
And no.
No, it was in a bad way.
In a bad way.
Okay.
They dropped in a bad way. They had been so stable. And then all of a sudden, my platelets and my white cells. No, my platelets and my red cells had dropped pretty significantly. And my hematologist, I got a little worried because it was to the point where I was like, wow, that seems like a significant drop.
Yeah.
I was always hovering around, for platelets, I was always hovering around the 30,000 level, which normal is 150 to 450,000. Mm-hmm. I was at 30,000.
Low.
But managing somehow. And then my red cells had dropped to around 2, which normal is what, 3 to 5.
Yeah.
So my hematologist was kind of like, you know, you've had these blips before where it dips and then it bounces back up. So why don't you come back in 2 weeks and we'll see if it's rebounded. Okay, all right. So I go back in 2 weeks and it hasn't rebounded. It hasn't gotten significantly worse, but it hasn't gone back up.
Yeah, like it normally does.
Like it normally does. So I'm starting to get a little weirded out. And I remember being in San Francisco with Mark, and we were having a conversation about, I don't know how it came up, but maybe it was about where we wanted to live in the future or something like that. And I told him, I said, you know, I just said, I'm not trying to be like weird or dark here or morbid, but I go, I really don't know if I have that much longer of a future.
Yeah.
And I just had this sense that something was happening and something was wrong. I couldn't put my finger on it. I couldn't figure it out. I'd already had these bad counts. But I just said to him, I go, something's not right. I don't think I'm meant to be here for that long. And he said, he goes, you know, you've said this now a couple times and I understand you have that. So like, let's figure this out, you know? So that was in like April of 2017. In June, I went to City of Hope for my June appointment as usual. And again, my counts had not gone back up. They had gotten even worse. So now my platelets were hovering around, I think at that point they were hovering around 15,000.
Were you getting like more bruises?
No, but what I couldn't do is I couldn't breathe. Like walking, like I had no oxygen in my body. There was no red blood cells. There were no platelets. There were no, I mean, yes, the bruising was bad, but the petechiae really started then.
Oh, okay.
That's really when it started for me. I mean, I would just scratch my arm lightly and it would leave claw marks.
Right.
And so, and they were like deep purple.
Uh-huh.
Like, they were deep purple. So the petechiae got really bad in that time frame. But otherwise, the other thing that I could feel was I just couldn't breathe. Like, I was constantly out of breath. I was constantly tired. Walking upstairs was a total, you know, I mean, it was like I ran a marathon.
Exhausting.
Yeah. Totally exhausting. And so in June, we ran the numbers, and again, they were really shitty. And she said at that point, she goes, you know, I think we've gotten to the point where we need to start talking about transplant. Mm-hmm. So I was overwhelmed because it was like 10 years of waiting for this moment, and it was almost like a bit of real relief, but at the same time, so scary.
Mm-hmm.
The relief was like, finally.
There's something that
finally know. Something is happening, so we can like move forward and like maybe get treated and figure this out and cure it. But then also with it came, well, what am I going to do for a donor? Because we haven't done anything because we don't have that good of an option. So being that this was in 2017, and this is 6 years later from 2011 when I first found that 9 out of 10 donor, the protocol for the stem cell transplant had changed yet again. And so they were actually going back to haploid transplants, which are half matches.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And so they're like, we want to rerun Randy, your brother, and we're going to rerun your dad. Because if we can do a half match, you're half your dad and you're half your mom.
Yeah.
And since mom was gone at this point, you know, my dad's the only option. So they're like, look, we could do it and probably have success. But we got to test them. Our first choice would be your brother because he's younger and, you know, age is a factor. So they screened Randy, and he, in terms of markers, it was going to be, it would work just fine, mm-hmm. Which was a huge relief. And it was, we were just so overjoyed. And then, and that was around August, September of 2017. And he had his medical workup done at City of Hope. And during that medical workup, you know, they asked for all your history, like, what have you had? What do you, you know, do you have anything that would cause concern? I mean, they asked so many different questions. Right. But one of the things that he had experienced was in college, he had an autoimmune disorder in college that is called Guillain-Barré syndrome. And it's a neurological disorder, and it leads to paralysis. Immediately they immediately they were like, well, red flag, stop. You know, it's like all of a sudden everything halted. And at City of Hope, there's a, so every patient gets a panel of doctors to discuss their case, because ethically one doctor can't make the decision for one patient, because you could get too close to the patient and be like, well, you know what, they deserve it, and we've got it. So they have a panel discuss everything, and then it's the panel's decision to figure out how to move forward for the patient. And so my doctor again called all of us back in, and we're like, this is not good. The last time we were all called back in, I got diagnosed. The next time we're getting all called back in, this is not good. And she told us that they were scratching Randy, and he couldn't be my donor. And it was, like, so devastating, because it was, like, back to square one. And so at that point, we were all sort of freaking out. And I said, so what are we going to do? I mean, what's our option? Because she said, you know, we really need to do this by the end of the year of 2017, because I'm worried that this disease is now really progressing. And it was at the point, it was in the fall, you know, this is August, September. I was transfusion dependent from between April and September. I became completely transfusion dependent. So I had to go weekly to get
blood
and platelets for just to survive.
Right.
Not to mention, I was just feeling shittier and shittier. So, we, you know, fortunately through various connections in our lives, family, friends, all that sort of stuff, and random connections, we had a lot of social media and a lot of like awareness start to build about registering people sort of as an emergency, like, hey, get everyone you know, because Chrissy needs this donor. And so that's when Tom Brady posted, and Sean Payton posted, and we had
that.
I
remember all your posts, or like all your stories, but I don't remember.
It was pretty cool. I got an email from, so Tom's agent is one of our dear family friends, and he had emailed me, and he said, hey, Chrissy, I just want to let you know, we love you, and we're getting the word out. And he screenshotted it, and I was like, oh, what is this? And it was Tom Brady's post on Instagram. And it was like my picture, and it was like, this is my friend Chrissy, and she's in need of a bone marrow transplant, and everyone That's should register. Crazy. It was crazy. It was so amazing.
Man, I didn't even have internet in my room.
It was pretty cool. And then my doctor was like, well, we're going to reach back out to that person who was a 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a second. You told me that wasn't a good option. She says, well, now the medicine's different. You know, science is different. We do a different procedure, different protocol. You know, you go through now a shorter period of chemo, but you go through full body, you know, radiation. And then chemo again, but it seems to be having a better outcome, and we can do these now with mismatches. And so you know, it was sort of like, okay, we're just going to put it out in the universe's hands to see if this woman's still out there. Because I don't even know if they contacted her in 2011. I don't think they did.
Right.
Because
they weren't going to do
it. We weren't moving forward. So I'm not even sure she got contacted as a, you're a potential match. So they reached out this time. And so it was just before Thanksgiving, and this was like at the beginning of end of October and beginning of November, and we were waiting for her okay. And I remember I got the call from my coordinator, and she said, okay, we heard back, she's totally in, and we're gonna start doing her medical workup, and you know, we'll keep you posted, and then we'll get a date together. And so it was like a 6-week period where we had to wait for her okay, and then wait for her medical clearance. And it was like the longest time ever. And so emotional. And
such a mind fuck.
Yeah, it was like hot, super highs and super lows, and it was really intense period. And I remember getting the call that she was gonna do it, and I was sitting with my two oldest nieces, and Mark and my dad at lunch, and she called and I just broke down into tears. And my niece Aiden, she goes, Auntie, I'm just so happy for you. This is all gonna work out. It's all gonna be okay. And so so we got the okay, and it was the week of Thanksgiving, and they said, okay, your go time is the day after Thanksgiving. So have your Thanksgiving meal. The next day you're starting chemo. I was like, oh, man. Lovely.
That's your 8-day countdown, right?
That was my 8-day countdown. No, that was my 10-day countdown. So I start, and this was when, so this is now at a point where, you know, I had 10 years to prepare for this, and 10 years to learn about every in and out of the transplant, every drug, you know, what the side effects are. Unfortunately, I saw many friends that I met through the process not survive. You know, I lost a lot of people through this process. But then I met a lot of people too that survived, and Alex became my center of gravity during that time, because I knew he had been through it and it was successful. And so, you know, I would text him, I'm freaking out, or how did you get through this? And what did you feel like when this happened? And what does chemo feel like? And, you know, did you lose your hair? And I had so many questions and so much fear, but thankful that I had people to go to, you know, to say, okay, what happened to you? And, you know, and I remember Alex prepping me, and he goes, look, it's going to suck. You know, the chemo's going to suck, and the full body radiation, that's really going to suck. But you're going to get through it, and you just have to know that in your mind you're gonna get through it. And so I would keep him in my head, you know, and he would give me phrases and he would give me words, and I would just focus on that during the treatment. And so the day after Thanksgiving, I remember we drove out to City of Hope. I got my PICC line inserted, and I had my first infusion of chemo. And
that's so crazy that this whole time you even...
I never had any.
Anything.
So I was really tripping out. I was like, what is this going to feel like?
Yeah.
And they had told me, you know, they had done their best to kind of prepare me. And but again, it's like none of them had been through it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's nurses and doctors that can only tell you so much. Yeah. And so I said, well, is this going to make me really sick? Like, is it going to be like the chemo that I see on TV, basically, or in movies? And they said, well, actually, this chemo you're going to get, it's not that bad. We have a lot of people that do it in, you know, outpatient, and they actually, you know, you might feel tired, But other than that, it shouldn't be that bad. Mm-hmm. We're going to give you, though, anti-nausea. Like, we're going to give you stuff to help you. So I said, okay. And I remember after the first day, it was long. It was just because it was just like I had to get a transfusion. And then I had to do the chemo. And then I had to get hydrated. And so it was just like a long day. And I remember three of my best friends' girlfriends came over that night. And we're all sitting around on the couch. And they're like, so, you know, how do you feel? I was like, I feel fine. I'm like, this is fucking bullshit. Like, I thought chemo was supposed to, like, make you feel sick. And I'm going to get all skinny. And what if I don't get skinny? Like, this is sucky, you know? Like, I'm not even throwing up. How am I going to get skinny? And they're like, Chrissy. I'm like, you guys, this is, like, no big deal. I don't know. This is no big deal. And so it was one of those where I was just like, man, this is a cakewalk. This is a breeze. I feel great. And so I did 3 days, and I was tired, but it really didn't actually feel that bad. And Sunday night, I got admitted. So that was November 27th. I got admitted, 2017. And I went through radiation, which absolutely kicked my ass and sucked. That was one of the worst experiences I've ever been through.
How do you feel during radiation? Because I have no experience from that. Like, what?
It's kind of weird. Like, you don't, I mean, so you're standing there because it's full body. Mm-hmm. You're standing there and you're sort of sandwiched in between two really big plexiglass screens.
Okay.
So you're in a very confined space. Uh-huh. And you're harnessed in.
Okay.
So you're in this, they strap you in. So you're harnessed into this sort of wooden construction thing.
They harness you so you don't collapse while you're standing.
Right. And that you don't move too much.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're just kind of holding on to these bars by your side. And it's loud. The room is open.
Did you post something? Like,
did you post a picture of the room?
A video.
Oh, you did?
It was like a time lapse or something. Oh, wow. Video. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
And it's, you know, they tell you, depending on the patient and what, you know, because I don't, how many minutes did you have? Do you remember?
I think it was like 15 minutes or something like that.
Oh, so maybe it's right around there, something like that. Yeah. It's somewhere in that range. Mm-hmm. They tell you ahead of time, and they said, look, it's going to be 2 rounds each day. So one in the morning, one in the afternoon. And each round is going to be 13 and a half minutes. Yeah. And I was like, that's nothing. Cool. Uh-huh. Whatever. Sounds great. Let's do it. So naively, I went in and I had like eaten a breakfast that Monday morning. And I was like, whatever. I'm going to feel fine. And I do the first one. And then It was uncomfortable just because it was like you're standing there in kind of an uncomfortable position because you're harnessed in.
Uh-huh.
And it is loud, but there's no like pain.
No feel. Okay, I was there's ask, no, like, what
there's
you feel.
nothing physically is hitting. I mean, radiation waves are hitting you, but you can't actually feel it.
Okay.
So then I got done with it. I was like, actually, that wasn't too bad. Okay. Then in the afternoon, I went back, and
did your that, back.
Yeah, and yeah, so you turn around.
Okay.
So after that second round, I got down, and I thought, oh, I don't feel so good right now. And they're like, are you okay? You just got really pale and kind of sweaty. I was like, yeah, I don't know. I'm not feeling so good. And it's I've at least felt. I felt incredibly nauseous after every session after that.
Oh.
I would get these sweats, like cold sweats.
Uh-huh.
And you get incredibly tired because it's just your whole body's getting fried.
Yeah.
And by the fourth day, so your eighth treatment, you're at the point where you're like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can physically stand there anymore.
I felt that. I was like,
I mean, you are at the breaking point. Oh, and goodness. You're just like, if I have to do one more of these, like, just fucking kill me. Just fucking kill me. And the nausea passes, but it's just, you just, you You don't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, then you're like, you don't really want to eat. You know, you have diarrhea, you know, all the time. Uh-huh. You're throwing up. That's when it really starts to kick in. They're like, fuck, this sucks, you know? So that was 4 days. And then they hit you. Then I was left for the weekend to just... I got my stem cells on December 1st. So okay. It was a Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my birthday, December 1st, 2017. And they left me for the weekend without any anti-rejection drugs. So they kind of want to... Now they want to see... All right, we're going to let...
Your body
uh-huh. accept this or reject it. Because what they were doing was, once you got your stem cells, they were immediately blasting you with chemo to suppress your own immune system
uh-huh.
so you wouldn't attack
right.
the donor cells. But what they were finding was, once they started taking you off the immunosuppressant drugs, then your body, if it was going to reject it, was starting, it would go into rejection
uh-huh.
mode. And there was a lot of really bad graft versus host issues happening, and people were, you know, not surviving and having
mm-hmm.
really bad complications. So this new protocol was sort of like,
let your body,
we're
going to
see what happens
yeah.
and, you know, then we'll treat it.
Mm-hmm.
And so once they let you sit there for the weekend, depending on what happens during that time, then you do another couple days of chemotherapy. And that chemo is different than the chemo they give you in the beginning. So that chemo made me sick.
Okay.
That was the chemo that was like in the movies, and
yeah.
I was like, oh, this is terrible.
Yeah.
So I actually shaved my head. I was like really obsessed with the hair thing. I got really obsessed with it. I was asking every person I came into contact with, I was like, so do you think my hair is going to fall out? And they're like, I mean, yeah, probably it will. And I'm like, no,
some
will it or will it not?
Some people's hair don't fall out.
And that's what I kept hearing.
Too,
it was like, well, some people it doesn't happen to. I'm
yeah.
like, right, so you're not answering my question. Do you think I'm going to have my hair fall out or not? And so I finally made the decision. I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to... My doctor was pretty clear, though. She was good. She was like...
Dr. Ozama?
Yeah. She goes... It's going to fall out. I go, you're sure about this?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, yeah, it's going to fall out. I'm like, all right, let's do it then. Let's just shave it preemptively. I'm in. Let's do it. So this was before radiation started. So I did it. Or actually, I'm sorry. It was that first day of radiation. I did it in between my two sessions. And
you had the hospital shave it for you?
I had the hospital shave it for me. I totally cried. And then my brother and Mark, my boyfriend, both shaved their heads right away. And
did you donate your hair to Lux?
No, because it wasn't long enough.
Oh.
I had already like cut it shoulder length.
Yeah.
Just to prepare,
it's,
you know.
It's like pretty long on donate.
Yeah, it's got to be like 10 inches or something, or 6 inches. But I didn't have enough long hair, so anyway, so for 2 weeks in the hospital, no hair comes out. Like, I have a shaved head.
Oh, and you're like...
No hair is leaving my body. I'm like, what is happening? And I'm like, my doctor would come in. I'm like, my hair is still here. And now I just look stupid with this buzzed haircut. She's like, well, it just needs time. And
yeah.
I'm like, I am going to be so pissed if it doesn't come out. And so I remember... I kept asking because I was really impatient during the process. I
mm-hmm.
was like, when's it going to work? When's it going to work? When's it going to work? When's it, like, when's my count's going to go up? When's my count's going to go up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it took about, it was day like plus 13 for me.
Okay.
Where finally one number changed.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Like it was like one, I went up from like 0.01.
Yeah.
To like
0.02. Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God.
It's a sign.
And and my doctor said, she goes, okay, I don't want you to get excited.
Yeah, because it could be.
Because it could go down.
Right. And it usually does.
And it usually, and that's what she said. She
mm-hmm.
goes, it usually does. But.
That's good.
That's good that it's moving. And I said, okay, all right, I won't get excited. And that next morning, I got in the shower. and I was washing my head, and I went, you know, to like scrub my head, and all of a sudden I like looked at my palms and it was just full of hair. And I shrieked so loud, and my nurse came in, she's like, "Are you all right?" I was like, "It's coming out!" I'm like, "Yes, it's coming out! I'm so happy!" And she's like, "I've never seen someone so happy to lose their hair." I'm like, "I'm so happy right now! It's coming out!" And so they came back up and they like really shaved it off, and then I was like a total baldy. And then literally the day after that, my counts started moving like fast, and they were going up, and I got to go home at day plus 23.
Oh, wow. Okay.
No, yeah. Plus 22. I was a total of 27 days in the hospital. I got to go home on the December 23rd, right before Christmas. And I had been asking my doctors, I was like, what's the shortest period someone's been in here? Mm-hmm. And they're like, the soonest we've ever seen someone leave is plus 19 days.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, okay, that's the goal, 19 days. And I didn't quite beat that, but I got to go home at plus 22. It was less, it was just shy of a month. So then... got really, really lucky in recovery. And, you know, I listened to my doctors very, very carefully. I mean, I listened to them and what they said and what they told me. I really took his Bible. You know, I took it like, this is what I got to do. She's telling me I got to do this and I'm going to do it. And I was by the book with them, and, you know, I owe everything to her, and she got me through it, and she told me she said, "I'm going to get you through it and you're going to be fine." And I'm just so, so blessed that like I had very few complications. It wasn't that I didn't have any. I certainly had some, and I still have some today, but nothing compared to what I know others have gone through, you know? And so I consider myself really, really lucky.
I think so.
Yeah. But that, yeah. So, and now I'm 1 year and like 2 months out. And it's...
I just turned one.
Yeah. So it's been a journey.
When's your birthday again, Alex?
My transplant birthday?
Yeah.
January 23rd, 2015.
Yeah.
We should have like a combined birthday one.
We should. Because we're October, December, and then January.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we should.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
We should have like a little anniversary party.
You know, hearing your story reminded me of my first visit and consultation at City of Hope.
Mm-hmm.
And it was with Dr. O'Donnell, because she was my
first doctor.
That's
right. She was your first doctor there.
And she actually spoke of you. And that's the first time I ever heard of your name, Chrissy Kubota, and heard about your story. Because she's like, because she was talking to me about finding a match and I'm gonna need some time, and she's like, I have a patient that's been waiting for 11 years, and she's fine, and I heard of you and your story like way in the very beginning. You've been a part of my journey from the get-go, and then to get to meet you and
I know.
And be in a movie with you.
Yeah.
and you know,
that's right.
Go to be the match events with
that's
you.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
Really awesome, dude.
Yeah. Well, you were a huge part of mine.
Share the same doctor with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And here you are now.
And like, here I am now.
Done with your transplant and done with your 11 years of waiting.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Thank God.
That's such a crazy like mind fuck the whole time, like feeling okay, but knowing that, you know, you only have this much this long to live. That's
such a contrast to you, because you were 13 and you didn't know what the fuck. You were too young to understand. You didn't have the time that Chrissy had to learn all this shit, and then you just went through it.
Yeah.
I'm just like, okay, whatever.
Right.
Can you imagine? Like, I was hearing your story earlier, and I was like, wow, that's mind-boggling what you went through, but hearing Chrissy's stories, like, that's hers is even, like,
crazier, I know.
More mind-boggling.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about more, but, yeah. Well, it's interesting, because a lot of people, you know, most people who deal with what we've dealt with, it happens in a shorter amount of time, typically speaking, right?
Yeah.
But I would meet people, and they'd be like, how long are you even doing this? Because, you know, I had so much time to learn like, I knew drug trials going on. I knew, you know, the ins and outs of all sorts of stuff. And even doctors, you know, nurses that I would meet, they'd be like, did you go to med school? And I'm like, no, no, I just have done a lot. What's wrong?
Everything good?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's been crazy. But it's over now.
But, you know, all of our stories, man, and today just reemphasizes it.
Yeah.
What a miracle, and how lucky all the three of us here are.
Yeah.
Totally.
And I think that's why we're all here doing this podcast together. Well, we get to you, it's like, why, what brings you here, and why you wanted to, you know, get this podcast started.
Well, I feel like, I feel like the biggest reason I wanted to do it was, one, because after meeting you guys, I felt, especially with the two of you, I felt like I had a crew of, like, you get me. You get it. You know, I could say one thing and you understand.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's all been different experiences and different timelines and different, you know, protocols, whatever, the essence of it was the same. And I feel like there is a need for others out there to have that support and to have that feeling of, I'm not alone. And there's plenty of stuff that's there for you to not feel alone, right? But it's something when you can hear other survivors talk about it that you start to identify and say, oh my God, that's totally what I had. You know, I remember reading this book before I went into transplant. I read this book called, I'm gonna forget the name of it right now, but it was like The Bright Light or something like that. And it was this woman who wrote about her journey with cancer. She actually ended up, her name is Nina Riggs. She ended up dying, but it was a memoir. And even though her story was like completely different, I mean, I think she had like breast cancer actually. The way she talked about it as I was reading it, I was like, oh my God. You know, she's talking about like the waiting room, you know, and seeing everyone in masks. And you're like, yes, I've had that.
Yeah.
And it's just that, you know, I feel like the three of us, we have been through something so intense and so heavy, but to turn it into something, you know, positive and as an inspiration for others to feel like if they've done it and gotten through it, I can do that too. I have such a desire to provide that to other people because I got that in my during my treatment. You know, you were a huge part of that for me, Alex. Like, you were the ones that I was thinking, I was texting and I'm thinking, you know, what did you say to yourself? How did you get through this? What did you do? And you gave me that. And so it was like, I want to be able to give that to other people too. And to talk honestly about the shitty part of it and the good part of it, you know? And how we can just help others. And I think that's why I wanted to do it, as opposed to trying to do one patient at a time. I feel like this way we can reach multiple people, and you know, anyone can tune in at any point in their journey and hopefully feel a connection to that and feel like we're speaking the same language.
Yeah,
right.
You know?
No, and I think that's part of our common denominator, like me, you, and Brandon, is what we went through and our attitude towards it.
Right.
I mean, I think we all, and I don't think everybody can say this, but I think we all feel like somehow it's not a good thing that it happened, but it's brought us goodness or
yes.
silver lining.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a mindset.
Yeah.
And it takes hard work to have that mindset.
It's like turning a negative into a positive.
Absolutely.
Right? That's
absolutely.
The connection that I have with you guys.
Yeah.
Because you guys have that same spirit.
Yeah.
Like that's
right.
how I feel about it, you know?
Exactly. And I feel like if there are people out there that don't quite feel that way, you know, like they aren't there yet, maybe this can give them that
right.
opportunity to shift that perspective,
mm-hmm.
shift that mindset, because the mindset going into it and the mindset getting through it and then the mindset post is so important.
Yeah.
And it's such a critical part of
yep.
healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just us coming together to be able to share that and show, you know, the honesty of it and the positive parts of it is really important, you know.